Thank you again. So the first talk, we were looking at kind of just the assumptions of what the College of Science religion were. Last talk kind of gave you some basic concepts of how we come to the idea of God. So now I want to talk about, so we have these basic ideas. Everyone can think about God. We have theory of mind. What happens to the people that choose not to believe in these ideas? And I think as Christians, this is an important topic as well, as we engage with other people, non-believers. So there's three questions I kind of want to address in the half hour that I have. So if religion is natural, if it's intuitive, why do some people choose not to believe in ideas that are so intuitive? Why aren't people believing these things if they come so naturally? Are there individual differences in those with religious belief and those without religious belief? So individual differences, this is the psychology, so we're all very different people. Why is it that some people choose to believe and some don't? And then why is disbelief prevalent in some societies? So there are some countries that seem to have a lot more believers than others. Why is that? What have psychologists said about these ideas? And what historical periods as well? So that's kind of what I'm trying to cover in a half hour. It's a big task. So what is atheism? It can be defined as a lack of belief in God or gods. So it's very rare to actually come across a true atheist. A true atheist doesn't believe in any kind of supernatural ideas at all. So an atheist does not believe in a ghost, an atheist. Perhaps that little had screen, they shouldn't believe in kind of atheists that kind of go around and shape things. They shouldn't believe in magic. They shouldn't believe in other kinds of things. They should just believe in the natural world. So it's very rare to come across a true atheist. Atheism is different from anti-theism, which is a fervent rejection of religion. So we see a lot of people in the media, those are probably more anti-theist than really atheists. So Richard Dawkins actually isn't an atheist, he's an anti-theist. He's very fervently rejecting religion. But he also has some belief. Fervent, it's very strong. Fervent is strong. So a very strong rejection. Thanks. Atheism is also different from secularism. So secularism refers to beliefs, practices, and institutions that are unrelated to religion. So it's not necessarily that they're atheistic, it's just that they don't have a religious component to it. So I want to make that clear. They can often coexist. And atheism is also different from agnosticism, which is basically just a statement about the unknowability if God actually exists. So in psychology, when you do research, you have to be worried about actually how you carry out the research. So in this, we talk about measurement issues, the methods. And actually looking at religious ideas, as you might imagine, is very tricky. These are abstract concepts. We can't see them. We can't really measure them. In a concrete way like in chemistry or in physics. So there's a lot of problems in psychology when you try to measure these things. So when we talk about atheism, it's really hard actually to measure this, or even belief, because a lot of people, how they measure it is self-report. So you give them a survey, and they say, do you believe in God or not? And they report it back. But it's much more complex than that. They could say, oh, I don't believe in God, but actually they may believe in angels. They may believe in ghosts, they may believe in a lot of things, but if they don't report it, you kind of think, oh, I guess they're atheists, because they said they don't believe in God. But there's more to it. So there's a lot of problems with self-report measures. It doesn't give us the whole picture. And sometimes people aren't that honest on these report measures. So there's a lot of difficulty with the type of things that we do to try and get at what is belief. And often religiousness is measured by these explicit measures. So an explicit measure is like a self-report. It's what you can vocalize. Implicit measures are things like theory of mind. So through theory of mind, that false belief task, what we are implicitly asking kids is if they believe in a God that's omniscient, if they believe in a God that can know everything. We weren't exactly saying, do you believe in a God that's omniscient? What we were doing with the cracker test was actually asking them, do you think that God would know that there's rocks inside the box? So that's an implicit measure. So we don't have a lot of implicit measures when we're looking at atheism, but there's a lot of research that's trying to look at something more implicit than actually asking people straightforwardly, are you an atheist? Are there other ways of measuring this? So there, the other problem with measurements is that when you go to a society that's very religious, like in the US or in Brazil, you're going to get different types of responses than if you say you go to China or Cuba or maybe even Scandinavia. You're going to get different responses as a whole from the people that live in these societies. So that can be a problem. And a lot of these studies are actually conducted in the US. So perhaps there's a certain bias that a lot of these studies are showing that may not be showing in other places. And just as a side note, so a lot of the research I was talking about in the last half hour, so those false belief tasks I was telling you about, they've been done in China, they've been done in Japan, they've been done in Scandinavia, Albania, Israel, and kids all across the world have those same responses. So we're getting pretty confident that these biases are cross-cultural. It's universal. So all kids everywhere, in every language, in every cultural concept, can have an idea about a God that's omniscient, which is pretty cool. So it's not just these US American kids that are strange. It seems to be across the world, these kids are having the same ideas. But it is something to be aware about and other stuff. So let's talk about belief and disbelief. So most people are religious. So as I said, it's very rare to come across a true atheist. And of course, within all of us, even in this room, I bet there's a variation in how religious we are and how much we go to church and how much the certain ideas and concepts that we believe about God. There's a lot of variation within religious belief. And what about non-believers? So it's estimated there's about 500 million people who say that they're atheists. And I put this in quotes because that could be very loose to what atheist actually means to these people. So it could actually be a smaller number that these aren't true atheists. It could be a larger number. We don't really know because we don't have the methods yet or the studies that show what true atheism might look like. So if you think about it, it's not very many people. So what I want to talk about, so I was talking about theory of mind, and as many of you know as clinical psychologists, there's something called autism, which has a deficit in theory of mind. So some psychologists decided to sit back and think, well, if theory of mind is really important for religious development, what happens if you have autism and you don't have the ability to have theory of mind, you don't have the ability to think about other people's thoughts and desires? What happens to those people when they try and think about God? Can they have a concept of God? So when you take these ideas, if they're natural, if you have theory of mind, you can think about God. So we know with neuroimaging studies that when you think and pray about God, it activates the same brain networks as those when mentalizing. So by mentalizing, I mean thinking about others, thinking about how they're feeling, what, you know, what kind of food preferences they have, and that kind of thing. So it activates the same neural networks in your brain. So we know this. So with these studies in mind, how is belief in a personal God affected when a person has a weaker ability to mentalize? So not only with people with autism, but there's also shown that we're all on a spectrum of how I'll give you a test in a little bit to see how good you are at mentalizing, but we're all on a spectrum. So there's a psychologist called Simon Baron Cohen, who's the cousin of the comedian, Sacha Baron Cohen. Simon Baron Cohen, he's a researcher at Cambridge and has spent his whole life looking at autism and this idea about mentalizing. And what he's found that girls, on whole, tend to be better at thinking about the desires and emotions of other people. Men, on the whole, tend to be a bit weaker. So he sees autism, actually, as a more male-brained disorder, is what he calls it. So he was very interested in this idea as well. So people, not only people with autism, but as where we are on the spectrum, how does that fit in our religious makeup as well? So in this study, they decided to test this idea. So they had four different studies that made up this study. In study one, they took a group of people with autism, and they asked them about various religious belief questions, which I'll show you in a second. And they compared it with neurotypical adolescents, so adolescents without autism. In study two, basically took 327 undergraduate students, which is a huge sample, asked them the same questions as well. Then they decided to go bigger. They decided to get a national sample. Mechanical Turk, have you heard of this website? So Amazon, you can actually do psychological studies called Mechanical Turk, so you can load up a study on there, and people can go in, and for like 50 cents. So it's in America, in North America that it's from. You can do a lot of psychological studies. So they got 725 people signed up to do the study through the Cannibal Turk. And then in study four, they got another broad-based American sample, but this time they actually recruited, they paid for a certain company to run the study, just to see if we would have any different kinds of results with people that are actually paid to do this type of thing. And they found some interesting things. So this is what they asked them to see how they believe in God. They asked them, so respond to this question, I believe in God. Is that true or false? When I'm in trouble, I find myself wanting to ask God for help. When people pray, they're only talking to themselves. How much do you agree with that statement? I don't really spend much time thinking about my religious beliefs. So those were the type of things they were responding to. So for study one, so this is the study, they only recruited those individuals with clinically diagnosed autism. So here's some other differences. In studies two and four, so because these samples, they didn't have autism, but they wanted to see on the spectrum where they fell. So were they empathizers, or were they more on the autism spectrum as far as how they could read other people? So they measured it through the empathy quotient. So they had items like, so to test empathizing, I often find it difficult to judge if someone is rude or polite. So if you find it easy, you're probably more a better empathizer. If you find it difficult, you might be on the other side of the spectrum. The autism spectrum. I'm good at practicing how someone will feel. So if you're very good about kind of getting into someone's shoes and figuring out how they feel, you tend to be a good empathizer. And also systematizing. So I'm fascinated by how machines work. I find it difficult to understand information that makes sense to me on different investment and saving systems. So systematizing is just the idea of how machines work or engineering, you get those concepts easier. So people with autism actually excel at systematizing. They're very good about understanding physics and engineering problems and that kind of thing. Just a little bit more to tell you about. They also controlled things like income, gender, age, education, just to try and see if those were also factors in this. And then study four, they gave them what's called the mind and the eyes test. So this is, I'll give you some examples of what this looked like. So Simon Baron Cohen, again, the man I mentioned previously, he's designed a whole bunch of tests to look at where you are in this autism spectrum. So we're all on it. Probably not in this room clinically diagnosed as autism, but we're somewhere on that spectrum. Some of us are really good at understanding how others feel. And as therapists, I hope that you guys will all score very high on this. It's a very good skill to have as a therapist. Or as a psychologist, it's very good to read people. So this is what mind in the eyes test looks like. So this is what they gave people. And what I want you to do in your seats is try and figure out what the emotion is behind these eyes. Is it playful? Is it comforting? Is it irritated? Or is it bored? This is a very hard test. There's 40 items, I'm gonna give you 5 of them just to kind of for you guys to see what this feels like. So I'll give you a while to think about that, and then I'll give you the answer. So that's playful. Let's do another one. Joking is, so flustered is kind of when you feel kind of like you're not prepared for something. Convinced is when you're absolutely sure about something. Insisting again is kind of this surety, in case you don't know what that word is. Here's the last one. So how did everyone do? That's a very hard test. I don't think I scored very well, and I don't know what that means about me. But it's a very hard test. They give you 40 different pairs of eyes with a whole bunch of different range of emotions. And that test is quite hard cross-culturally. It's a lot of those words. A lot of other cultures aren't exactly sure what each emotion is. So it's a very hard test. So don't be surprised if you got a few wrong. It's very difficult. So they gave this test to this group of people. So here are the results. So in study one, so this is with the populations of people with autism and those without, they found that mentalizing was a significant predictor of belief in God. So what that means is those people that find it really hard to think about the emotions and desires of people really struggled in their belief with God. They had a really hard time finding a personal relationship with God, which intuitively that makes sense.
This was just people with diagnosis with autism, and there's just 25 people.
Yes, it's very small.
Just to keep my mind straight.
Yeah. So this was with only, I think it was 12 adolescents with autism, so it's very, very small, which is why they incorporated studies 2, 3, and 4 as well, because you can't conclude anything with 12 people at all. That's not good science. So study 2, so these are with the 327 undergraduates. So they took a variety of tests to test where they were on the autism spectrum. They also asked all those variety of questions about religious belief. And they also found that people that were finding it very difficult to think about what other people think and feel, so they scored higher on an autism, but they're not autistic, but they just, on the spectrum, they find it really hard to engage with other people's emotions. Also predicted a lower belief in God, so people that really struggle also had a lower belief in God. And there was also a trend for men to report lower belief in God. They also struggle with mentalizing as well. So this idea that Simon Baron Cohen was talking about male brainness seems to be correct in this way as well. So in the national samples, so these big surveys, so while they control for income, age, gender, education, all these things, those don't seem to have any effect on belief in God. So people in all types of spectrums, all walks of life, either had belief or disbelief, it didn't matter. What did matter was this autism score again. So those that scored high on the autism score were more likely to have disbelief. Also again, men who were lower in mentalizing also had lower belief in God. This wasn't the case with women. And interestingly in this population, lower education and lower religious attendance were also associated with lower belief. And that seems to be intuitive. If you're not attending church, probably very likely you're not believing as well. So there's no surprises there. So something just about across the lifespan. Oops. Just briefly what some other studies have shown. So as we've just been shown, more men tend to be atheists than women. So that's something to know when we're engaging with non-believers. You tend to find it more in males. Also, the strength of your religious upbringing. So if you're more likely to be raised in an atheist home, you're probably more likely to be atheist. There's no surprises there. Also, the number of children. Homes with a lot of kids actually tend to have more faith than families with just one child. It's another result that people are finding. Marrying is also another effect. People who have a spouse or a partner are more likely to be religious than those that are not. And agreeableness. If you're a nice person, you're also more likely to be religious. And I think it goes both ways. I'm sure if you have religion, it encourages you to be nice. So I think it goes, so it's not a surprising finding as well. So let's talk about, so those are some individual differences. So it seems that people that score high on autism, which is just, that was a study that came out about 2 years ago. Some of that isn't surprising. So we know a little bit about age, about marrying. What about societies as a whole? So there are certain countries that are more religious than others. Why is that? So here are some ideas about why actually some people choose to have religion. So there was a study, so after the big earthquake in New Zealand, a group of psychologists got together. They had already just done a study about how religious New Zealand was. And a lot of it found that a lot of people didn't believe. But after this earthquake, they noticed a surge in belief. A lot of them were searching. They were in pain, they were suffering, they had lost their homes, their jobs. A lot of people, they started to search, to spiritually search. And they found that spiritual belief and belief in God search that I think an increase of 20%, which is a pretty big increase. So suffering can actually cause people to choose to commit to religion and to God. An awareness of death. So this is very Freudian. When people are confronted with their death, when they have a diagnosis or they're older in life, sometimes that can make them decide to choose to believe in God. I don't think there's any surprises there. Perceptions of randomness and uncertainty. So when you are faced with existential questions, and they do this in studies of primates, so they put you in a situation where it's really uncertain, it causes a little bit of anxiety, those people are more likely to believe in God, even in that situation. So certainly in cases of suffering or places of trauma, when it's uncertain, people tend to believe and want to believe in God. And I don't think any of these are really any surprises to any of you. And social isolation, when you're alone, you tend to seek out company. If you're alone, supernatural agents are another a way of communing with other people. So a lot of people will turn to God if they're by themselves. So I want to talk, this is a new idea. So in places where there's poverty, high infant mortality, short lifespans, economic inequality, and unreliable government services, you will see more religious people. Because there's a lot of suffering, you'll see countries as a whole will be more religious. As social conditions become more secure, belief and attendance decline. And that's what we see is happening in Northern Europe and across Scandinavia. That the more secure your country is, the more wealthy you are, there tends to be less need for religion. And we're seeing that in a lot of different studies. And this is quite unique historically, because we haven't ever seen this before in the history of mankind. It has never been this secure, ever. So we are living in a very privileged time, especially in Northern Europe, since we're all living here. It's very different. So how as Christians do we do this? We've never been here before. We need to look at this a little bit differently. So again, this is just saying secularized societies have virtually all basic materials needs met. So if your needs are met, what do you need? You probably don't need a lot of spiritual needs. If we live in a safe environment with trustworthy governments, the governments are in charge of making sure everything goes to plan and that criminals are prosecuted and everything is so, why would you need God? And that's actually where I want to leave you. So with some questions. So now that we know from the previous lecture that we're biased to think of God, yet some people choose to not believe in God for reasons as we suggested in this talk. So knowing this, how do we talk to non-Christians? So if we all come from a basic understanding that we can all think about God, if we're not on the autism spectrum, we can all think of God, we all have this basic understanding. We've obviously chosen to believe in God. Other people haven't. How do we engage them with these ideas and what we know now? What do we do with that? And as we all live in Europe, and in Northern Europe in particular, in places where life is good, we're secure, we're fairly wealthy compared to other nations, and we see other people, they have no need for a personal God. How should we talk about belief to others? What does that look like? How does our individual personal lives impact those they don't seem to need God? What do we do with that? And what do we do with the research that I just told you about? And just to answer some of those questions, if you want to look further in science, a lot of other these science topics, these are some books that I recommend on just these ideas. If you want to look at more scientifically, of course, you can look theologically and biblically, but if you're interested in the psychology, I recommend these books. Why Religion is Natural and Science is Not, I think I told you about that last night. Big Gods, How Religion Transformed Cooperation and Conflict, and then Religion Explained, The Human Instincts That Fashion God's Spirits and Ancestors. So that's all I have today, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And that's it.